Thursday, September 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Barack Obama makes the case for an Asia-Pacific rebalance in Asia.
And in the United States, across the political spectrum, there's widespread recognition that the Asia-Pacific will become even more important in the century ahead.
Afghan forces kill three gunmen in a deadly siege. And Australian DJ producer Flume has a new hit single here in the United States. It's all ahead. President Barack Obama has reassured nations in the Asia-Pacific that the U.S. strategic rebalance to the region will endure for the long term because it reflects fundamental national interests. The president spoke in the Laotian capital, Vientiane, one day after making history as the first sitting U.S. president to visit Laos.
America's interest in the Asia-Pacific is not new. It's not a passing fad. It reflects fundamental national interests. And in the United States, across the political spectrum, there's widespread recognition that the Asia-Pacific will become even more important in the century ahead, both to America and to the world.
Following Obama's meeting with Laotian President Bunyan Vorachit, the White House announced new assistance from the U.S. to help clear the bombs dropped by U.S. forces in the 1960s and 1970s.
I also know that the remnants of war continue to shatter lives here in Laos. Many of the bombs that were dropped were never exploded. Over the years, thousands of Laotians have been killed or injured. Farmers tending their fields, children playing. The wounds, a missing leg or arm, last a lifetime. And that's why, as president, I've dramatically increased our funding to help remove these unexploded bombs. As a result, Laos is clearing more bombs, fewer Laotians are being hurt or killed, and together we are saving lives.
VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas is traveling with the president. She tells me about Obama's efforts to build a new relationship with the government of Laos.
The key message for him here is to reassure the people in this region, not only to nations, but also to the people, that the U.S. is committed to this rebalance. And now, one of the number of reasons why it was so important, because he said, make no mistake about it, this is in our nation's interest to engage with countries in this region. This is where the population is growing, is expanding, where it holds tremendous promise, also a lot of security issues that the U.S. needs to become involved in, engaged with countries in this region. And so he's working, he said, throughout his administration, he has been working, I should say, throughout his administration to build ties so that the U.S. is part of this process. And he said, the U.S. is a big nation, and we are here, we're here to stay, we're committed, and you can count on us. He literally told the people, you can count on America. But this message was also for the audience back home in the United States. And I think you spend a lot of time here trying to push this strategic rebalance. I mean, what does it continue beyond its presidency?
Yes, because he brought in, you know, a number of years ago, he talked about the U.S. pivot towards Asia. And of course, you know, this is going on as there is a rising power in China, and Laos is an ally of China's.
Well, and that's what's really tricky about the situation. It's definitely been more allied with China, and this is the Communist Party leading here, and elected a new president here. And the president acknowledged, look, we've had a complicated and difficult past, but that doesn't mean we can't work together. And so, White House officials say this is part of this administration's policy of reaching out to countries with whom we have had tense relations or no relations in the case of Cuba, if you look at it, and start to build ties. But there is no question that Laos is definitely one of those, is not squarely allied with the West, or the U.S. I mean, definitely. But also, analysts tell me that Laos is also seeking a little bit more independence. They don't want to be so connected to China that there is no other way either. So the U.S. has seen that kind of situation in the country as an opening for some sort of dialogue, maybe the beginning of some kind of opening up.
Well, there is, of course, a history between the United States and Laos. And after President Obama met with Laos president, there was an announcement of there's going to be a $90 million contribution to Laos for a survey of unexploded ordnance and also bombs that were dropped by the United States in the 1960s and 70s.
That's correct. And the president mentioned, even people in America aren't quite aware of how many bombs the U.S. dropped here, and how painful that history, that part of history has been, and how much pain it has caused in this country. And so he says, I come here with a conciliatory stance, and I think part of our moral obligation is to help heal this pain. And so part of that will be to take the survey of unexploded ordnance here in this country. And that's just one of many ways. Tomorrow, he's actually going to visit some of the people who have been hurt by, explosions like this. So he's definitely reaching out on that level. But it's just the beginning. Of course, this is, as I said, a very painful and difficult period, and it's not something that's going to heal that quickly.
VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas reporting from Laos. And now for what's happening on social media, I'm joined by VOA's Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's going on?
Well, this historic trip by President Obama to Laos is trending, as well as the comments, controversial comments from the Philippine President Duterte. But a lot of people noting on social media that this trip to China and then Laos has been kind of overshadowed by some unfortunate moments. Those comments from President Duterte, but then also at the G20 in China, this scuffle on the tarmac with the press getting into it with Beijing officials about the red carpet, literally the red carpet being rolled out, and President Obama had to take the stairs from the plane down. So,
yeah, I think it's been called Stairgate.
Stairgate, yeah. Everything is a gate attached to the end of it. But so that's, for a lot of people on social media, unfortunate that these overshadowed what were some really big moments coming out of the G20 and this Laos trip. But otherwise trending today, British Airways, another plane story. Some problems with British Airways check-in system online has grounded a ton of flights, canceled a ton of flights, a lot of people stranded. And what's interesting about this is that this is, I think, the third or fourth instance of this happening in the past few weeks. We had just a few weeks ago, Delta Airlines, I believe, had something similar happen to them. So a lot of questions about the security of these systems, if it is just a glitch, why there isn't more IT security or IT support for that. And a lot of people speculating, well, if a terrorist group wanted to do a lot of harm or create a lot of chaos, they could target these airline systems. So a lot of questions about how secure they are. And then finally, we talked about yesterday, Labor Day, and here in the U.S. and other parts of the world, what follows Labor Day? Back to school. So today is hashtag first day of school for a lot of students around the world. We see a lot of teachers and students unhappy that they have to go back to work and school today, but a lot of parents on social media celebrating that they get some peace and quiet after a long summer of having the kids home. So good luck to all the students and teachers going back today to school.
Absolutely. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor, Andrew Pelshevsky. Some of the top stories trending. North Korea sends an expensive message with its missile tests. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are in a virtual dead heat 9 weeks ahead of the election. The French prime minister calls for a recount in the disputed Gabon election. And jihadist terror and refugees are likely the defining factors in upcoming European elections. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. the key ingredients in making beer are the seed cones of the hop plant. They're also used in the manufacture of dietary supplements to help women relieve postmenopausal symptoms. Now, lab tests conducted by a research team at the University of Illinois at Chicago has found that an enhanced hops extract could also someday be used to ward off breast cancer. Researchers created compounds from the fortified hops extracts and then applied them to two different breast cell lines. They wanted to see if any of the compounds had an effect on the metabolism of estrogen, something that's considered a key process in breast cancer. A compound called 6PN was created, and preliminary test results are suggesting that it could have anti-cancer effects. But additional research must be conducted to further investigate possible helpful effects of the hops compound. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, DJ Flume has a new hit, and we'll have a listen. Afghan security forces Tuesday killed the third and last gunman holed up inside the offices of the aid group Care International in Kabul. Dozens of civilians, including foreigners, were rescued. It brought several hours of violence, including two earlier bomb blasts claimed by the Taliban that killed at least 24 people and wounded more than 90 others, to an end near the defense ministry. The latest attacks come less than 2 weeks after gunmen assaulted the American University in Kabul, killing at least 13. At least 80 people were killed by a suicide bomber during a July 23rd demonstration in the capital. RAND Corporation analyst Jonah Blank tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the latest violence underscores the precarious security environment across the country.
The Taliban is launching a major offensive and is taking very seriously its goal of inflicting maximal casualties.
President Ashraf Ghani, in a statement, said the enemies of Afghanistan have lost their ability to fight the security and defense forces of the country. That's why they are attacking highways, cities, mosques, schools, and common people.
Yes, I think that's very true. If one looks at the pattern of the recent Taliban attacks, they have generally been targeting soft targets. They have not been going after hardened military bases, as they had done in the past. They have been going after civilians. They've been going after targets that really are not traditionally targets of legitimate war operations.
It appears that the defense ministry may have been the target of some of these blasts.
The fact that this is a Department of Defense target puts it in a nebulous zone, but the fact that these were non-combatants according to the laws of war, they were not actively engaged in hostilities at the time they were attacked, puts that, at least in terms of international law, in the realm of non-permitted targets. The Taliban doesn't really seem to make that distinction.
Elsewhere in the country, Jonah, the security situation is somewhat tenuous in Helmand province. What's the status of the Taliban effort to take over the provincial capital of Lashkargah? Also, the Taliban reportedly closing in on Kunduz in the north.
Well, Lashkargah has been on their hit list for quite some time. Helmand has been a contested province since at least 2008. For a long time, the Taliban held the small but important population center of Musa Qala for over a year, actually, before NATO forces were able to retake it. Kunduz in the north, which is far outside the Taliban stronghold, was actually overrun and held for more than 2 weeks by the Taliban last year. The Taliban has a proven track record of making inroads here, and it looks like that is not merely the past.
It's Jonah Blank of the RAND Corporation. The uptick in violence comes a month before the European Union and Afghanistan co-host a donors conference in Brussels, in which up to 70 countries and 30 international organizations and agencies will be asked to support Afghanistan's development and reform efforts. This is VOA.
The Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. VOA Border Crossings host Larry London joins me now to discuss the new hit single by Flume.
That's right, Sarah, exactly. And if you were to say the name Harley Stretton, most people around the world would say who?
Yeah.
But when you say Flume, the typical response is, oh, yes, the electronic dance music DJ producer who is on the charts right now in the top 20 with his latest hit and a song that has become his very first platinum hit called Never Be Like You. That's who Flume is, and he's currently on tour promoting his second album, Skin. He was just here in Washington over the weekend, two sold-out shows at the 930 Club, and I even interviewed him for Border Crossings.
So who is this guy?
Well, he's an up-and-coming electronic music producer. Right now in the music world, that seems to be the current trend. At least here in the United States, it's been around for the last few years, with groups like Skrillex and Diplo and Jack U. And then there's the more established names like Calvin Harris and David Guetta. But Flume is a new star on the rise. He's very popular in Australia, where he's from. In fact, he won the Australian Recording Industry Association Award for Best Artist of the Year and Best Producer of the Year. And he was nominated for a handful of them. And his new song is quite popular. It features a young, up-and-coming Canadian singer. If we don't have enough Canadian
singers already.
Her name is Kai, or at least that's what she goes by. So let's listen to Flume and Kai and the new song, which is out right now. And I hope you enjoy this single.
What I would do to take away this fear of being loved, allegiance to the pain. Now I'm messed up and I'm missing you.
We've talked about this before, but a lot of DJs, you know, like you mentioned, Calvin Harris, are getting involved in recording now.
Everybody, you know, it's electronica. That's what's going on. All of the EDM dance music producers are creating music, and Flume is the latest in the list of many that have come out in the last couple of years. When he was on Border Crossings, which you will be hearing in the near future on the show, he talks about why EDM is so popular, and at least he reflects on why he thinks it's popular in the United States. It's been around for a long time throughout Europe. DJ Sammy had a hit back in the early 90s called Heaven. There have been a lot of DJs, club DJs. Make a lot of money. Calvin Harris, top Forbes list for DJs this year, $63 million he made in a year.
Not bad.
No, not a bad day's work. And so Flume is on the rise right now. And as I say, this song is platinum with Kai, who is the newest Canadian artist on the scene. Her real name is Alicia De Gasperis, and she chose the name Kai. She said it's Japanese for change, and that's kind of what she wants to reflect. But the single is called Never Be Like You. He's just recorded a new song with Tove Lo, who's a Swedish singer, who's also is on the rise right now. And he's done remixes of artists like Adele and Lorde and Sam Smith. And his music is quite popular. In the club world, he's very, very popular. And on the charts, he's just starting to make his mark and on the rise right now for the album Skin.
All right. Thanks very much, Larry. That's VOA's Border Crossing host, Larry London.
I'm only human, can't you see? I made a mistake. Please just look me in my face. Tell me everything's okay. I made a mistake. Please just look me in my face. Tell me everything's okay. 'Cause I got it. Ooh, never be like you.
And that is the music of Flume, assisted by singer Kai. Well, a French woman who received the world's first partial face transplant has died 11 years after the surgery that opened the way for dozens of other transplants worldwide. The Amiens University Hospital in northern France announced Tuesday that Isabelle Denois succumbed to cancer in April. Her family wanted the 49-year-old's death to be kept private. The hospital did not release further details, and it's not clear if her illness was related to the transplant. But heavy use of immunosuppressant drugs had weakened her system. Well, that is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The recent suicide bombing in Aden, which was claimed by Daesh, highlights the violence that continues to rage in Yemen. In September 2014, a small minority from the north of Yemen, the Houthis, allied with former President Ali Abdullah Saleh, took the capital of Sana'a by force. This action forced members of the Republic of Yemen government, including President Abed Rabo Mansour Hadi, into exile in Saudi Arabia and prompted the government's request for a Saudi-led coalition to begin a series of military strikes to drive back the Houthi-Saleh alliance. In the absence of a political solution between the parties, Daesh and al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula have taken advantage of the instability in Yemen. Secretary of State John Kerry recently met in Jeddah with officials from Saudi Arabia and several other Gulf countries, as well as UN Special Envoy Ismail Old Sheikh Ahmed. Mr. Kerry announced U.S. support for a renewed UN-led approach to negotiations between the warring parties, with both the security and political track simultaneously working to provide a comprehensive settlement, an agreement whose details would be finalized by the parties themselves in negotiations, but whose broad outline would include the following.
The swift formation of a new national unity government with power shared among the parties, the withdrawal of forces from Sana'a and other key areas, the transfer of all heavy weapons, including ballistic missiles and launchers, from the Houthis and forces allied with them to a third party.
The new approach, he said, would require the new unity government to respect the security and integrity of international borders and would prohibit the deployment of weapons from Yemeni territory that threatened international waterways or the security of Yemen's neighbors. Mr. Kerry expressed gratitude to Saudi Arabia and others who joined in supporting the new framework and called on all sides to be supportive. The restoration of stability to Yemen is vital in order to ease the suffering and to prevent groups like al-Qaeda and Daesh from taking further advantage of the political and security vacuum that has been created, said Secretary Kerry. It is essential for Yemen, for countries in the region, and for the world community to agree on a plan to end the fighting and achieve a lasting peace.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. We'll be right back.